From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made with stories of survival. And a quick note to our listeners, this conversation will include descriptions of burn accidents and injuries, which could be difficult to hear for some people. We want to offer that disclaimer in case you or someone you're with could be affected by the content. Today, you will hear powerful and remarkable stories from people in our community who have navigated life-threatening accidents with fires, both at home and at work. According to the Finger Lakes Regional Burn Association, about 400 people are hospitalized at the Kessler Burn and Trauma Center at Strong Hospital each year, and there are thousands of people treated in outpatient clinics. So what can be done to help support burn victims, both physically and mentally? Our guests are trying to do their part to help us understand and really help people who are also going to be in their shoes understand what they've been through, how these injuries, they can be life-changing, but they're not necessarily life-ending, and their experiences are going to help guide others, and I want to welcome them now. I'm grateful to have Anne-Marie Giffel with us. Anne-Marie is board president with the Finger Lakes Regional Burn Association, co-director of Camp Courage, and a burn survivor herself. Anne-Marie, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having us.
John Grieco is here, a retired Rochester Fire Department lieutenant, a metal artist and event host, and a burn survivor as well. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
And Paul Schwartzman is executive director of the Finger Lakes Regional Burn Association and a licensed mental health counselor. Hi, Paul. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us, Evan.
John Grieco, by the way, is kind of a local superhero. He's had a very important career helping serve the community. And now, for people, by the way, this is not me like being a homer. John didn't give me a deal on the piece I bought from him, but I am a customer of John Grieco's because he is a metal artist who makes amazing fire pits. The fire pit I have, bought right from John as a gift, and it was so awesome. So he's a talented guy. I did not know about you that you're also a burn survivor, and we'll talk about that. But thanks for what you're doing, and tell us a little bit about what's coming up Saturday, May 21st. Anne-Marie, John, can you guys tell us a little bit about what's coming up here?
I think the first thing I'll say, it's not a black tie event. We have really fancy posters, and I've gotten people ask me, oh, is this black tie? It's casual, you know, look good. There's going to be, you know, Roarbox is going to be having a beer for us. Black Button is going to be having a drink. We're going to have plenty of finger foods. A bunch of silent auction things and a blues band, and it's just going to be a blast.
That's Saturday, May 21st, 6 to 9 p.m., and it's happening at John's Object Maker Art Space. That's on Railroad Street. It's right near the public market. So for people in our community who know John, they know immediately where I'm talking about. If you don't, describe the space. Where are you?
I'm just up the street from Black Button and Roarbox. Cat Booch is down with us. Bitter Honey. It's a real gentrified industrial street, and I'm just right outside the market. I have all my crazy stuff hanging out in front. You'll know as soon as you go by where to go. And there's plenty of parking at the market itself, too.
It's an important event. It should be a great time. I'm sure it will be. Anne-Marie, how important is this event for you?
This is huge for our organization, especially after we've been on a hiatus for how many years because of COVID. So this has really impacted our community. We haven't seen our kids together, meaning our burn survivor children, for Camp Courage for the past 2 years. And these kids are really hurting. So what we do is we help them emotionally, physically, spiritually to get through, you know, the trauma that they've lived through and continue to thrive moving forward.
Tell us a little bit more about what Camp Courage is.
So Camp Courage happens once a year. It is a four-day overnight camp. It includes children from 6 to 17 years of age. It's anyone that has been impacted by a fire or burn trauma. So we see children from, a lot of children actually have been burned at very young infant ages, scalding water. We see a lot of scald burns. So it's a great place for kids to come and open up and be making new friends with the kids that they're with and experiencing in a comfortable, supportive environment the trauma that they went through to help them heal through the process.
If you want to learn more about the Finger Lakes Regional Burn Association, it's flrba.com is the website. And if you want tickets for this event coming up here, How do people get that?
Go right to flrba.com and click on the link, buy a ticket.
Paul Schwartzman, are you going to be there?
You bet. I'm very excited about this event. And it's now, outside of our pandemic hiatus, which has been sad, we created the event 12 years ago to be one of our key fundraisers, but also to be a celebration of the effort and the healing that our burn survivors put into this effort, all our volunteers and the folks in the community who support this effort, and also to really create awareness of this issue. And every year we have an opportunity to do this, Evan. I'm always amazed that we hear from somebody out in the community who had no idea that we existed and that there has been support. And in some of these situations, they were injured years and years ago and never had a chance to talk about it. So we created this event for all those purposes. It was actually originated with ourselves and Albert Paley, also a world-renowned metal sculptor and burn survivor, and was in his gallery for all 10 years. And then, Albert's closed the studio to work on his archives and other mission. And John, we are incredibly grateful, has agreed to carry the torch, so to speak.
Well, John is, if you're there on Saturday, May 21st, I don't know, John, if you're going to see, people will see some of your pieces and some of your work. Will they see some of the stuff there? Yeah?
Yeah, and I made a piece for the show, actually, that we'll auction off. And
that's great.
It's just, I mean, the things that I've done and the people, I have people working with me, so there's just stuff all over the place.
I am a notoriously not a great gift giver. I'm not very creative. But the next door neighbors had this unbelievably beautiful fire pit. And Chris and Corey next door, if you're listening, they make beautiful fires. Yes, Corey, your fires are bigger than mine. I get it. But I was like, where did you get this? It's not only an awesome fire, but it's like a work of art. And they're like, oh, you got to go see John. Like, he's amazing. I get in touch with John. John's like, what do you need? Sends me pictures. The best gift I've ever given. It's the best. I hope you get overloaded with requests now. Because, you know how hard it is to give people, a birthday gift or, a Mother's Day gift, whatever. If you're the kind of person who loves backyard fires in the warm months, oh, my. I don't know why everybody in Rochester doesn't have a John Grieco piece.
And, I take a lot of credit for that, but I certainly have to thank so many. My parents were practical, children of the Depression, that if whatever you do, it better be practical. And so I steal ideas if I need to. And so I came up with this kind of some cool ideas where they function really well as far as drainage, and I make them out of heavier material so they last longer, because also I try to be a good shepherd of the world we live in. I see these trashy fire pits being thrown out all the time. It doesn't make any sense to me.
They're falling apart after one season.
Yeah, they make them so thin. So that's where I come from. And with no real art background, I have a love of architecture, and I just love shiny things and admire things. And, we're going to Paris in a couple months just to look at structures and art.
Amazing.
We just love it. And
that's amazing.
So, yeah.
My little grade is warped, though. I got to talk to you about that.
A lifetime free grade.
I will also put a plug in, because besides the fire pits, I have a beautiful side table in my office that's also a Grieco piece.
I love that.
But let me also put a plug in. I mean, part of this event is a celebration of art. When we established it, Albert initially, and I reached out to John to be part of this process, but we also have some incredibly talented people who have donated pieces. Olivia Kim, who's another sculptor and worker, has donated a piece. We have some beautiful paintings by Tony Dungeon and prints from Henry Avion, pottery from Jennifer Buckley over at Hungersford. The list is goes on and on. Christine and Paul Novak have been a part of our effort since the very beginning. So we're really grateful for all of their contributions. So not only a really good party, but if you want to really appreciate some of the things that comes out of our own community, it's a great opportunity.
It's all coming up Saturday, May 21st from 6 to 9 p.m. The Gateway to Healing Gala Fundraiser that's happening at John Grieco's Object Maker Art Space on Railroad Street. Information, tickets, and more, flrba.com. And that's the one thing I did not know about, John, is that your own story of being a survivor. And I know that you actually, I'm not saying to say enjoy times, enjoy is the wrong word, but you appreciate the chance to kind of share what happened because it can help people. Take us back. What did happen with you?
It's basically, in a nutshell, I was working at night at the firehouse. So I worked during the day in my metal shop, finishing up a piece before I had to be at the firehouse, and wanted to put a clear finish on it. So just want to say, don't do this at home. I put a can of varnish on my wood stove to warm it up a little bit, to get it to flow, because my shop was quite cold at the time. I was in a hurry, which a lot of times that's when you make mistakes or have a lapse of judgment, and it certainly was a bad judgment call. So I picked up the can off the stove, shook it once, a full can literally exploded in my face, and my face was covered with varnish, fully engulfed in fire. I could not put it out. I'm trying to pat it out, and then a dear friend of mine who was working with me at the time, Maddie, yelled for me to get down on the ground. He came over and patted me out with his hands and actually burned his hands doing it. I got up. I took a deep breath in, and I realized that it hadn't gotten in my lungs. And I said, okay, there's my first check mark. And then I slowly opened my eyes, and I said, wow, I don't think my vision has been impaired.
Can I ask you briefly, at that moment when you're thinking about, okay, I've got lung capacity, I can see, you had been a firefighter for how long?
A solid 20 years okay. before that.
So is there a part of you that thinks there's always a chance that you could end up as a burn victim when you're fighting fires? And are you more aware of what you may be going through in that moment because of it?
To be honest with you, I never considered that I would be. You always think you're going to dodge the bullet. And I think that if you, but I mean, a healthy sense of infallibility.
Sure,
because you have
sure.
to have a certain amount of ego, a certain amount of, I don't want to say ignorance. I can't think of the word I want to use. But you got if you think that you may get hurt, you probably shouldn't be in that line of work. Again, we train to avoid all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the irony here is that you fought fires for years, and that's not where you were burned.
I've been burned a few times.
Not like this.
Nothing like this.
So you open your eyes, you realize you've got lung capacity, but then what's going through your mind?
I think the main thing that was on my mind was going into shock. I mean, my face stung pretty good, you know, relatively, not for what had happened to me, but I think I was still relatively in shock and worried about maybe shocking out. So I said to Maddie, what should we do? He said, you should go to the hospital, you know? And so I said, fine. Again, being a firefighter, you don't want to ride an ambulance, et cetera.
Okay, et cetera. Like, Mr. Tough Guy minimizing it.
Not
wanting to go to
stuff.
Emergency response.
But I did. I conceded, and it was the right thing to do. And they gave me morphine as soon as I got in there, and it definitely lessened the pain. But before then, I called my wife, my guiding light, Lori, and told her, which she gets these calls periodically, that I've been hurt and I'm going to the hospital, but I'm fine. So she said, fine. In the meantime, she called Maddie, and she said, Maddie, what really happened? And he said, Lori, his ears and nose have melted off. And that was, again, Maddie was in shock probably more than I was at the time. And it was just the outer layers of my skin that were sloughing off because of being melted off. And as you can see, there's no real residual scars, which is a blessing. And I'm blessed, but I still feel, and I don't even really want to say this, that I feel a certain amount of guilt for what I've seen in my lifetime, that, man, the bullet that I dodged. That's what I'm saying. I'm dancing here. I'm so blessed. My ears, you know, they're compromised, you know, in the cold months and things of that nature. But
in what way, John?
A pain.
They hurt.
With the heat and cold, relatively. But I mean, the skin and our tissue is so delicate. It's hard to conceive how quickly the nose melts off, your lips, your fingers. It's a different dimension of life that, and again, you can't see that on me.
So, but can I also just ask you, in those early days after that, you told the story of the little girl who looked at you and how that moved you. Tell me about that.
I was at a wake with a lot of people. What they do is they want to protect the skin that is left. And so you cover yourself with Vaseline. I mean, just to the point where it's sloughing off. And again, you have like a towel around your neck because, again, with your body heat, it's constantly melting. And that alone, besides, you know, the color that I had turned and some of the skin missing and whatnot, was relatively garish looking. And this girl was actually a friend of mine's daughter at the wake with us. And they weren't with us, but they were there. And a child's sense of awe, and they just can't, you know, she was almost drooling, just looking like, what is this? And again, it just gave me time to pause and think about what other people, I felt pretty good. I didn't know what was going to come of me as far as scarring. But I felt pretty good because I knew that my nose was still on, you know, and my eyelids and things of that nature. But I didn't know, but it kind of for a moment put me in a sense, a place of if somebody wasn't as fortunate as me.
Helped you with empathizing, I think, right?
Thank you. Well said, yes.
Yeah. And I also want to mention that, you know, when John was going through just the days after where you're thinking about recovering from second and third degree burns, the support network starts to form, and Paul Schwartzman, who's on the line with us now, of course, and you're learning about what this organization does. Take me through what you were learning and who you met and what that meant to you at the time.
Well, I think my relationship with Paul, that's where it started. And he came and offered support. And we got it talking. And I like references, if somebody comes with references. And Paul was actually instrumental in getting the Fry unit started for the city fire department here. Which is fire-related youth. I think that some of the fire investigators actually came to Paul. He was a counselor at the U of R. And Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, but they said, hey, can you help us? We're getting an inordinate amount of children burned at these fires. Handle this. And Paul said, geez, I'm not really sure what to do. And they said, well, we can maybe get you a grant. And Paul said, well, I think we could probably do something then. and so they developed this. Literally, the city Rochester Fire Department, along with Paul, developed this program. So that just made me love Paul immediately. You know, besides he's a cute guy, you just want to hug the guy every time you see him. So take it from there, Paul. I mean, again, the support you gave me goes without saying. And at the level that I needed it, being a professional, which everybody needs a high level, but he just hit all the right notes for me.
Well, appreciate the shout out. Definitely wasn't me by myself, but yeah, I was with the Department of Psychiatry at Strong Hospital in the beginning of my career, along with a couple other colleagues, when Jerry Bills, an arson investigator from the City Fire Department, came looking for services for children involved in fire play and fire setting, and unfortunately a significant number of those also injured. So we learned a lot about what those needs were and motivations, and then I got involved with the Kessler Burn Center, and lo and behold, got involved with this small nonprofit called the Finger Lakes Regional Burn Association. Because of some of the background with children in fire, they thought I could bring something to their effort. And at this point, I'm really kind of a newbie and not sure what I have to bring to the table. And got involved as a volunteer originally. And they said, well, if you're going to work with this, you have to come to camp. And so off to Camp Courage I went for the first time, and quite honestly, a little anxious about, you know, what I'm going to see and how I'm going to handle it, that and what I can do to support these children and others. And I keep saying is, once you've come to camp, you're kind of bitten, and it becomes a passion and just a very profound and humbling life experience. And in that began to really learn just how traumatic an injury this really is. And it's a lifelong injury. You'll hear more from Anne-Marie, I'm sure, who is younger. And as she mentioned, some of our children at camp were injured as babies. And the burn continues. It's a childhood event. It's a young adult, impact, your issues with relationships and intimacy, and then as an adult. So, we really got involved in really understanding what the need for that support is, bringing other burn survivors who are well along in their own recovery, and developing these programs over the years. Now, I'm not responsible for developing the association. It was actually firefighters, volunteer firefighters back in the late 80s, who established the association. And I showed up probably about 3 years later in Proud. It started as a volunteer and proud to be its executive director today. And we've really expanded it over the years. It originally started with camp and some fundraising for the Kessler Burn Association or Burn Center. But now we have camp and the young adult program. We have an adult support group that, when we're not in COVID, is physically at the Burn Center at the hospital. We do individual and family therapy. We have what we call the SOAR program. It's survivors offering assistance in recovery, and that's in tandem with the Phoenix Society, which is an international support program out of Michigan. John and Anne-Marie are both peer mentors or SOAR providers. We do some emergency support in terms of financial assistance, housing. When a family member has a long-term stay, and it usually a serious burn is a long-term stay, we might help in funding compression garments, which are expensive and not often covered by insurance, but help in minimizing scars and recovery. We do a school reentry and work reentry program, because very often when a child's out of class for often months, the other kids in the class don't know what's happened or what to expect. And so we do some preparation both for the child who's injured and for their classmates about how they can be of support and what they can expect to see. And then we also do prevention work to try to stop this before it happens. So that's kind of, what you've triggered from, John's level of support. It really is a very broad and deep level of need throughout the burn community.
And John, you went with Paul to become a certified counselor as well?
Yes, I went to World Burn. I think it was in, Paul, what year was it? It was Cincinnati?
I think it was here. I went with you. Yeah.
Yes. It was Cincinnati.
And so they have classes there. And that was a beautiful experience, a real eye-opener, in the sense that I think there's probably 700 burn survivors at this World Burn. And what they'll do is meet in an auditorium, and if you just have the desire to tell your story, you just start talking, and people listen, and the stories are ghastly as far as how some of these start with parents and things of that nature.
Oh, man.
It's, crazy. And again, an eye-opener to just another dimension of life that you rarely, I don't think we see it. Like, my brother was a burn survivor, which is another story for another time, but he had a vaporizer as an infant fall on his head. And the things that he had to go through his entire life. But you don't notice it necessarily. It was just part of his face was burned. So if you would see him from one angle, you'd never know that he was a survivor or that he had been burned. So that time at World Burn was priceless to me. To learn how to become a support and an advisor, but also to learn experiences from other people.
And you've been able to apply that to some of the work that you learned there as a counselor now?
Yes. And a lot of it's common sense, empathy and caring and just reassurance that life goes on, And I, again, another story for another time. When I was caught in a flashover a few months before I retired, we were trapped. I've never been, again, just another single time experience. And the kid who was with me got second and third degree burns from this incident. But the ability to kind of keep my, be patient and keep my calm, I think came from a lot of my training for that also.
I think it's helpful for anybody who feels like what they're going through now is so all-consuming that it's hard to see that there can be another end of it. And I'm thinking, you know, somebody listening right now may be in week one of chemo, and you can't think of a post-chemo world, and you will get there. It will happen. Someone is dealing with radiation treatment. Someone is dealing with, you know, a burn injury that you feel that there's not another side to this. And I think your experience, when they understand your story, John, I mean, you're such an empathetic person to begin with, just a good dude, that helps. But you also can, you know, kind of hang with them and say, I've been there. And, you know, you experience so much. That has to be invaluable to people.
Yes. Yeah. It helped me through my recovery. But, yeah, I think that, again, it's common sense that if we maybe reset, had like a paradigm shift where we're a little more empathetic to people and stuff, I think as a culture we would be a better people as far as being patient with people and recover. Whether it's cancer is a great example, you know. You don't know if you're going to come out on the other end, you know, or to what degree and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, with everything, everybody needs support. That's why I love this. What a niche, kind of, the Finger Lakes Regional Burn Association that helped me. Because I've never experienced cancer, and there's so many things that I have not experienced. But to have something that I did, and if somebody needs me, hey, put me in, coach.
Well, after we take our only break, let's talk about what Anne-Marie has gone through and maybe some of the lessons that you apply now to not only your life but your work. I'm so grateful that our guests are willing to share these stories and help people. And if you're just joining us, they've got a big event coming up on Saturday, May 21st, 6 to 9 p.m. at John Grieco's Object Maker Art Space. That's over on Railroad Street, right near the public market. But the way to find information, tickets, et cetera, about this event is to go to the website for the Finger Lakes Regional Burn Association, FLRBA.com. Let's take that break. We'll come right back. We'll talk to Anne-Marie about her experience and more on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections, a Rochester teacher is alleged to have made his black students pick cotton. Was it a way to offer a historical lesson? Or, as so many parents have said, did it cross all kinds of lines? You will hear from the parents and their perspective on Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We had mentioned that John was going to tell his story, that Anne-Marie was going to tell her story, but there's so much more coming up on Saturday, May 21st. And John did mention during our brief break that if you cannot attend on Saturday, May 21st, you can always support the association, right?
Absolutely. Every we save the money. We give it to support good people, good cause. It's we can never have enough money.
You know what I'm obligated to say? We're in the middle of our spring pledge campaign here, so I can only endorse contributions to WXXI Public Radio, but I'm glad to be the conduit so people can make their own decisions on what else they'd like to support, and I know that it helps a lot of people. So it also helps people if you're a member of Public Radio, but that's another story.
I'm a sustained donor to PBS, to WXXI for years.
Are you truly a sustaining member?
Absolutely. Since forever. It goes back to
this
the
was
early
not like
2000s.
Teed up. We're not supposed to talk about this.
Okay, we'll talk after.
You should come in and pitch sometime. Like, people would give money if John Grieco's telling
them
to pitch.
Everybody
will listen to you.
As long as Adam Frank will still come on your show, I'm going to still give.
Oh, I'll get Adam on once.
He's one of my biggest heroes.
Oh, I love that.
I'm a member also.
Oh my gosh! See, look, no. As much as I appreciate this, and as much as our whole XXI team, we'll spend plenty of time pitching this week. And I know most listeners are already thinking about getting on WXXI.org and giving. But Anne-Marie, your situation's different than John. So John's burns came at a time when he was an adult, had been working for many years. Yours go back to your childhood. What happened?
So I was a sophomore in high school. I was on spring break. Last day of my spring break, my sisters and I went over to my older sister's house, and we wanted to have hot dogs on the grill. And actually, it was a rainy, drizzly kind of day, really a Rochester day, basically. Mm-hmm. I had attempted to start the charcoal fire with lighter fluid. We ran out, went in. Kept saying, I can't get it going. On the third time, I used gasoline. And there literally was maybe only a few drops of gasoline in the can. But the vapors have filled the garage. And I was standing under an overhang, and the garage door of the front of the house was closed. And when the gas can exploded, blew me back in the garage. And most people, they tell you in school, stop, drop, and roll. And that is incredibly important. Unfortunately, I did not do that. Immediately went into shock and ran through the house. And my sisters finally tackled me in the living room. And the fabric that I had on was very flammable. So as John talked about, the sloughing of the skin and just the material was just like embedded and melted into my skin. So I was burned 60%. It was definitely a family trauma. My sisters experienced this with me, feeling really guilt. You had talked about the guilt with the family. And it was a long road. It really was a long road. I spent over 3 months at the Kessler Burn and Trauma Center. Now, this is 40-some years ago. We did not have the resources of FLRBA at the time. So after I was released from the hospital, it took a good year for reconstructive surgeries, and I dug my heels in, and still I get a little anxious when I talk about it. It's not something I like to go back to, but I feel like it's important to go back and relive it, only because there's other people out there that may have a similar situation, and they may be feeling isolated and alone. I didn't have resources to talk to. So I dug my heels in and I just kept on going. Went back to school, struggled reconnecting with my peers. I had this life-altering experience, and, you know, your makeup and hair wasn't important to me at that time. And I just was a very lonely place. As a female, 16 years old, being burned 60% was really traumatic.
Were your friends supportive?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I had some really good close friends. I actually had my childhood sweetheart that I married. He was part of my life from before the accident, and we have been married 36 years. So he was part of it on and off for quite a long time until I worked through all the emotions of feeling accepting of my scars and what I had gone through. There have been ups and downs throughout my life. I had children, and I never anticipated going in and having cesarean sections. So I ended up in an operating room, and I basically had PTSD. It was very traumatic. So even to this day, maybe about 8 years ago, I was introduced to the Finger Lakes Regional Burn Association because I had some problems with my leg, some scar tissue. So burn injury isn't like your skin is healed and then you're done. Depending on the depth of your burn, specifically second and third degree burns, your nerve endings are, they're just, you know, burnt. There's nothing there. So it's like firing nerves all the time, especially if you like try to relax and stuff.
Even as we sit here now?
Yep. Like, I'm sitting here, my leg is, you know, tingling. So, yeah.
You can feel it, huh?
I can feel it, yeah. It's just a constant reminder. You look in the mirror, you know, I look at my hands. It's just constant, you know. I don't look at it in as a negative way any longer. I now look at it as like, wow, I have survived. I'm doing really well. I'm happy in my life. But it was a journey to get there.
Can I also offer an observation, Emery, that and I really actually want to be careful in how I put this out there. But in a sense, I would think that for people who will suffer burns and have that same anxiety that, you know, you and John have talked about, there must be a lot of comfort to meet someone like you and go, there's no way if I met you, I would have known that you are a burn victim, a burn survivor.
Right.
The work of the medical system, I mean, some of the reconstructive work, I mean, it is remarkable. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put that as the only goal, because there are going to be burn victims who, you know, will have more noticeable sort of physical attributes, and that's also okay. That's also, you know, that's
exactly
part of their own story.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to sort of offer this as like, that's not the only goal here.
Right.
But for those who are really, especially 16, 17 years old, it can be really, really scary.
Well, even just that age. I mean, you're,
absolutely,
you're not quite
that's
an
hard
adult
enough, right?
Yet,
that's hard,
you know?
Enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John mentioned the feeling guilty when he would go to World Burn or he would see other burn survivors and think, wow, my face is, you know, you don't see any of those scars anymore. That trauma is trauma, whether you have the scars on your face or you have hidden scars. I thought after I was burned, I needed to hide my scars. So that took a very long time for me to accept. Going in public with short sleeves and wearing shorts or wearing a bathing suit in public. I actually did so much healing when I went to Camp Courage. So I had this surgery that was 8 years ago, reconstructive, and one of the nurses at the Kessler Burn and Trauma Center said, there's this camp, you really should go. And I was like, oh, I'm still healing. I don't know if I can deal with this. At the encouragement of my family, they were like, you need to go. So I went, and it was a gift. It really was a gift from these children, because I was able to see what I had gone through as a teenager from adult eyes. And it was huge, a huge part of my healing and recovery.
Wow. And one other question I wanted to just kind of touch on with you, because I'm listening to your story. And a week ago, I was having dinner with a friend at his house. He was cooking outside on charcoal. Mm-hmm. And we had a hard time starting it. And he was kind of starting to really pour on the lighter fluid. Mm-hmm. And at one point I said, let's tone it down a little. Now, that's different. I think what I heard you say is that you actually went over and got a little bit of gasoline.
I did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Which is, nobody should do.
Never, ever.
That is not a substitute for lighter fluid, et cetera. Do you also like sometimes feel nervous when people are kind of over just the,
oh, yeah,
a can of lighter fluid, right?
Oh.
Just be careful.
The lighter fluid doesn't bother me because I can see it. It doesn't go whoosh like a gas or a propane or something. I will take a lot of steps back when somebody is lighting a grill, whether it's propane or even lighter fluid. But it's the whole whoosh sound, or if I get a smell of something, it brings me back to where, you know.
So be careful. I mean, this is grill season now.
Yeah.
But, you know, heed the story from Anne Marie, please. And just
do
be careful.
Do not use gas. Yeah. Do not.
Yeah, just be careful. And she's meaning gasoline. I mean, as
absolutely
even a drop of it on there. Just be careful. But let me also ask Paul to jump in here too. I mean, so much of this story, every person's story is unique, but so much of what she needed is reflected in the work that that you do, Paul. Can you share some of what you're thinking as you hear her story?
Sure. I mean, I'm so grateful for the both of them to be willing to do this and to do it from their perspectives. But Anne-Marie taught me something years ago. You know, again, when you say it was only 8 years ago, that shocks me, right? That, you know, I feel like we've been together for a lot longer. But you made a comment early on in our relationship that, well, if you don't deal with your trauma deals with you. That's an Anne-Marie quote. And I've been in the mental health profession for 4 decades. And so, you know, I've dealt with trauma and mental health challenges throughout my career. And they're all important, but I think the burn injury is really kind of a unique journey. I was thinking about your analogy to cancer a few moments ago, which I think is very appropriate. But if we recover from, you know, cancer, you recover from cancer. You're, you know, hopefully in remission and cancer-free. With a burn injury, that's never true, as you're hearing, you know, even now, 40-some years later from Anne Marie. So, you know, and people don't understand this, the impact of trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder, which, you know, can be ameliorated and in many cases really kind of put behind you more than not. But it's never gone because trauma gets uniquely coded in our bodies. And, you know, we do one minute of science, you know, we have neural pathways in our brain that whenever we have an experience, those neural pathways form a specific association so that when anything feels like it, smells like it, sounds like it, you're in that situation. This is Anne Marie, you know, describes the whoosh of the, you know, the flammable liquid igniting. So, you know, helping people to understand that even though it's a horrible memory and that you're having a sensation of that moment, you're not in that moment. But that takes a lot of work mm-hmm. and support, not only from mental health professionals, but other people who've walked the journey.
If you want to make sure that someone who needs this ends up at Camp Courage, I just want to give a little space for our guest to tell you a little more about that, because Anne Marie is telling a really compelling story of how Camp Courage affected you. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
I wish it was there when I was 16.
Yeah. Do you think about what that would have meant?
Been?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, and maybe how that affects.
I do think,
teenagers too. Yeah.
If I go back to, school, the aspect of school, I had no idea how, much learning was being impacted by all the narcotics and the pain and the itching. I was a good student till the last, you know, 2 years of high school. I just could not get my brain to function. I wish I had a resource of somebody that could have said, you know what, this is reality from what you went through.
Mm-hmm.
Until I was an adult, I didn't have that reference. So I always thought, oh, I'm so stupid. I make up these things, you know, like we all do sometimes in our heads. So what I can recommend is that anybody, if you were burned when you were a kid or you were burned as an adult, whatever, when you walk out of the hospital, yep, they fix you up. But there's a lot of emotional, psychological work that needs to be done to get to a place where you feel good about yourself. At least that was from my perspective.
So when does Camp Courage run? Give us the details again.
It is the first week in August. I don't actually have a calendar in
That's
front
okay.
of me. Paul? August
4th? I want to say August 4th.
Yep. 4th through the 8th. It's at Watson Homestead. If you're interested, go to flrba.com.
flrba.com if you know anyone who can benefit from this. I'm going to ask this question. I think this matters here. So much of what an organization like FLRBA is doing is helping in so many different ways, psychological, but sometimes there's the financial question. And I have no idea, by the way, John, Anne Marie, how much insurance covered, if this is...
Yeah.
Oh, boy, Anne Marie, I wish people could have seen your face when I asked that question.
Well, I remember as a teenager, my family struggled. I mean, we were... 5 kids. My dad was working. My mom was working part-time. But I don't think insurance covered everything. And I know from my perspective, I felt guilty. Like, I am a huge burden to my family. And it was financially. I know that
the financial
really took
recovery from the burns?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
Wow. John, what about you?
I have good insurance. I'm blessed. But I know that they raise money for, like, the pressure bandages and things like that. That a lot of times... certain insurances don't cover that, for example. So no matter how good your insurance is, depending on like the pressure garments and things like that, they're always like hidden costs.
Paul Schwartzman, Executive Director of the Finger Lakes Regional Burn Association. Can you also weigh in on the financial support that people may need here?
Yeah, sure. I mentioned the family aspects. I mean, again, there's a lot of variation in terms of health insurance and what covers and what doesn't. But we've mentioned a few times the compression garments, which are they're these very tight-fitting garments that most people who have to wear them complain about for a long period of time. They can also often have to wear them for maybe a period of a year, and particularly important for children because they really kind of, you know, help the elasticity of the skin and minimize the scarring. But for some reason or other, the insurance companies are not covering those in the same way they did at other times. And you might go through 3-4 pair in the course of a year, and they run about $1,500 a piece. So there's one expense. The Kessler Burn Trauma Center is the Trauma One Center here in this region of New York State. So very often people are mercy flighted or brought here from other regions of the state. That means their families have to come and be here. Insurance doesn't cost, you know, cover housing or hotel costs. So, you know, we often will, where we can, jump in. And we actually have a very nice relationship with another small nonprofit called Harbor House that owns a home right across the street from the hospital with 6 bedrooms. And they'll do a sliding scale. And so if necessary, you know, you can get some free housing or very reduced cost housing. So those are cost. Just time on, you know, if it's a child who's injured, a parent or parents want to be there, you know, you don't get 3 months of vacation time. So those are, as John mentioned, some of the other hidden costs. So but let me also throw a plug in for us is that our services carry no cost to any of our consumers. All the, you know, camp is free, all their support groups, all their therapies are covered, which is what makes this fundraising so critical.
Let me grab a phone call because I see that Patrick Flanagan's on the line. Patrick, former Democrat and Chronicle reporter and all-around world-class nice guy. Hi, Patrick.
Hello, Evan. Thanks for the compliment. And I want to start by thanking and commending your guest for coming on and reliving that traumatic experience for the benefit of others. I just wanted to point out that when I was at the Democrat and Chronicle, I did have the opportunity to go down to Camp Courage and cover that for a story. And I've written a lot of stories about a lot of horrible things, and that I would say is one that really haunts me. You know, haunt isn't really the right word, but it stayed with me. And when I had a daughter of my own, a lot of what I learned at Camp Courage applied to my parenting. You know, the word that kept coming back to me is something I learned from the PIO at the RFD at the time. The public information officer for the Rochester Fire Department, you know, taught me the phrase, teach your children to respect fire. And that was really the sort of the underlying message I brought into parenting after having been to Camp Courage.
Well, I mean, Patrick, I mean, I share the way that, you know, you think about parenting and you want to protect kids, but it is also at least comforting for families who have to, you know, go through this process to have something like this in our region, isn't it? I mean, it's I'm sure there's many that don't.
Yeah, I was very happy that these kids. Yeah, I remember the word bug juice. Anybody who's been to summer camp kind of knows what bug juice is.
Best.
And I just remember thinking, these kids may never have learned that word from if it weren't for Camp Courage.
Absolutely. No, they get. I mean, in many ways, that's the quintessential childhood experience too. So. Patrick, thank you. Thanks for that affirming phone call. Nice to hear from you.
Thank you, Patrick.
Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Good show today. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Anything you want to add there, Paul, briefly?
Echo in a little, you know, a couple of comments about camp, because the goal is for it to be camp.
Yeah.
And for it to be fun and
right.
For kids to have kid experiences.
That's bug juice, baby.
Time,
that's right.
Bug juice. At the same time, it's also an opportunity to develop some unique skills. We really do kind of weave in a strong psychosocial support network in it. And so John even mentioned the little girl staring. And, you know, those aren't unusual you know, things that happen. It happens all the time to the burn survivors, and it's how do you deal with that? So we even, you know, we take time out to kind of role play and process. What do you do when somebody makes a comment or staring at you or ask a question? And so how to empower them to respond to that and to feel good about themselves in that situation, which then we do know, then carries outside of camp and back into their neighborhoods and in the school. So it's really, it's very important on both those senses. It's a chance for them to come and jump into the water and be normal kids. And again, not have anybody stare at them with their shirts off, but also just to experience that with their peers.
It is Saturday, May 21st from 6 to 9 p.m., the Gateway to Healing Gala fundraiser. It's happening at John Grieco's Object Maker Art Space. That's on Railroad Street, right near the public market. Tickets are available. John's going to be there, who you should definitely meet. Everybody should meet John Grieco in this community. Anne Marie's going to affirm that one, right?
Oh, yeah. Actually, you got to see the canister in the ceiling, okay, from the explosion from John. It's a friendly reminder.
Oh,
it's actually
boy, oh boy.
It makes it almost really unique.
Oh, boy. I guess so. There's going to be music and live and silent auctions and food and whatnot, and it's all at flrba.com if you want to check it out for tickets and to learn more about what the organization does, the Finger Lakes Regional Burn Association. Anne Marie is board president. Thank you for sharing your story, and thanks for being here this hour.
Thank you.
John Grieco.
Thank you.
The best. John Grieco, thank you, sir.
Thank you very, very much. Great opportunity.
Great having you here. Thank you. And Paul Schwartzman, executive director of FLRBA. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Evan.
From the whole team at Connections, and that's, well, Miles and Rob and Julie and Evan and Megan saying thanks for listening, and I hope you are a member of your member-supported public radio. You can give right now at wxxi.org/give, or you can call to make your gift now at 585-454-6300. Whatever the situation in your life, we're thrilled you're with us, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.